This past June, I was invited to conduct a retreat for what is known as the NAIM group, N-A-I-M, from the widow of Naim in scripture. This is a group of widows and widowers who come together every month to give each other companionship and support. There were about 30 participants, and among them was a woman by the name of Pat Aker. I didn't know her by name, but she walked into the retreat room on a walker, with a walker, and there was a place set aside for her, and she very gently sat on her chair. And as soon as she did that, there were a couple of other women who came and helped her to prop her chair, her legs up on the chair in front of her. And I was really impressed with the kindness. Look at this camaraderie, the sense of fellowship, the sense of love for each other. I just noticed it, didn't make any comments about it. At break time, Pat very gently walked out, perhaps to go to the restroom, and I stayed in my place preparing for the next session. I stayed in the room. Pat was almost immediately back, and as she walked, I glanced towards her, I smiled, she looked back and she said, "I know you, Father." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yes, I was at your silent retreat that you did a few years back." See, every Lent I do a 24-hour silent retreat. And the year that she had attended, this retreat was on Teresa of Avila. So she was at that retreat. I did a similar retreat last Lent, and I didn't see her there. So I said to her, "You know, I did another retreat last year, and I'm going to do one in 2015. Would you like to be contacted? Would you want to be on the list?" She said, "Yeah." She says, "I would love to come, but I'm not going to live that long." She said, "I have cancer, and my doctors have given me 6 months to live." I'm shell-shocked. What do you say to that? So my reaction was, "What are you doing here at this retreat?" I said, "If I were you, I would be lying in bed, wallowing in self-pity." And she said, "Nah, that's not for me. I know where I'm going. I'm not worried." And then she asked me to help her to put her legs back on the chair that was in front of her. So I very gently lifted her legs and I put it on the chair, and when I'd finished, my hands were trembling. About 4 weeks later, I got a phone call from one of her friends saying that Pat Aker had died. In today's gospel reading, Jesus assures his very terrified disciples, and he says to them, "Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid." And when I read a story like that, I ask myself the question, I say, is this story for real? Is Jesus being realistic when he says to people who are terrified and who are frightened, "Do not be afraid"? Are the events narrated in the gospel, are they for real? And the reason I'm asking this question is because I have been terrified myself. I have sat on the side of a road terrified because my motorbike was hit by a car and I was thrown off the bike. The bike was under the car and I was scared beyond my wits. And I'm sure there have been moments in your life that you have been terrified yourself. Think of Peter. He's about to sink and he says, "Lord, save me," and he's terrified a second time. And Jesus says to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Really? I guess I want to get to the faith that Jesus wants me to have. How do I get there? So that's the question that I'm dealing with or reflecting upon in this homily. How do we get to the faith that Jesus is referring to? And my three practical implications are going to deal with this question. How do I get to the faith? Now, the way I'm drawing these practical implications from Scripture is based on our first reading. That reading where you had Elijah standing on the top of a mountain and God comes, first there is an earthquake and then there is a mighty wind and there is a fire, and God was not in any of those. God was in a small whispering sound. And I'm saying that there are small details in today's gospel reading which we can overlook. And in those small details, we have little clues on how we can develop the kind of faith that Jesus is talking about. So here's my first practical implication. The first small detail. When Peter, who was drowning, cried out to Jesus and said, "Lord, save me," Scripture tells us, but Jesus actually stretched out his hands and held it out to Peter and saved him. See, in the context of the big miracle and the big story that Jesus is walking on water, it's possible for us to miss that detail. So if Jesus is here and the boat is somewhere there and Peter's walked out of the boat, he's from a distance crying, "Lord, save me," and Jesus, for his power, I mean, he's walking on water, right? He could have just said a word and Peter would have not drowned. But Jesus actually steps forward, puts his hands out and pulls Peter out and saves him. And for me, that gesture of Jesus reaching out to Peter with his hands to save him is symbolic of what has happened in all of salvation history. See, God could have saved us by saying one word. If God can create the entire universe with a word, why could God not have saved us just by saying a word? But no, Jesus stretches out, God stretches out God's hands in Jesus. Jesus comes to us. Just as Jesus reached out to Peter, God sent Jesus. These are God's hands. And God does not allow us to sink into that which we fear most, death. I don't know how you and I are going to die. We have no control over that. I do know this, that God has already reached out to us on the cross. Jesus stretches out his arms on the cross to all of humanity, and not one person who cries out to God saying, "Lord, save me," will be abandoned. Not one person. That which terrifies us most, death, God has already saved us from that. And we must have that back in our consciousness. We know where we are going. That's what Pat Aker said, right? She says, "Nah, that's not for me. I know where I'm going." because she knows that God has already reached out to her and saved her. So we must keep this big picture in mind. Small detail, but really a huge step on behalf of God to save us. Secondly, there are times in our lives when death is not the most terrifying thing, right? Like my mother, she always says to me, she says, I'm not afraid of death. I just don't want to linger on. I just don't want to suffer pain. You know what I'm afraid of most? I'm afraid of dying alone. And that happened to me because I went to give somebody his last rites, the last sacraments. There was nobody there. I gave him the last rites and I couldn't stay there for a whole day. I left, no family, nobody. Man dying alone. I called my niece right away. I said, you make sure that I don't die alone. Well, that's my fear. I'm not afraid of dying. Afraid of dying alone. See, Jesus, who asked the disciples, why do you doubt, was also terrified. He was so terrified in the Garden of Gethsemane that he goes on his knees, and scripture tells us that he sweat blood. And in his fear, he cries out to God and he said, please God, take this cup away from me. And then as he hangs on the cross, he has this terrifying thought that God has abandoned him. My God, why have you abandoned me? And perhaps many of us can identify with that because perhaps in our lives we have been afraid. We have been scared beyond our wits. So what can we do when we are terrified or feel abandoned? What can we do? So again, I'm going back to a small detail in today's gospel reading to draw the lesson for us. What's the detail? Today's scripture reading begins with these words. Matthew tells us, Jesus went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When it was evening, he was there alone. So Jesus, the same Jesus who's terrified and who cries out to the God, he often found himself alone with God in prayer. And I'm telling you, folks, if you want to deal with fear, there is simply no substitute to prayer. How often do you find yourself alone with God? Really, just like Elijah on the mountain, like Jesus on the mountain, how often do you find yourself alone in prayer? And because Jesus spent his time in prayer, because he was a man of prayer, when he's terrified and he says, take this cup away from me, he's also able to pray, but Father, not my will, but your will. See, he was terrified, but because he was a man of prayer, he knew how to deal with it. On the cross, when he's terrified that God has abandoned him, he's still able to say, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Not into some oblivion, into your hand. He knew where he was going. Yes, he was terrified, but he knew where he was going. So, none of us can insure ourselves against fear. You might leave the church right now and there might be a situation where you're terrified. Fear will always shock and surprise us with terrifying moments. But if we want to face life like Jesus did or Pat Aker did, today's gospel is inviting us to be men and women of prayer. In other words, It's not only enough to call on God when we are terrified. Every time we're afraid, we just can't say, "Dear God, where are you? I thought you said you'll be here with us." Well, if you want to recognize God in the midst of our fear, then we have to recognize God in those quiet moments first. Unless we are men and women of prayer. If we do that, if we become men and women of prayer, then when we are terrified, we'll find God exactly where we find God at other times, especially in time of prayer, by our side. Thirdly, there is another little detail here in our story which we can miss. And it's a great lesson for any of us who want to become men and women of prayer. When Peter was drowning, he says, and this is funny, he says, "Lord, if it is you." He doesn't say, "Oh my gosh, thank God you're here. Come on, save me." That's what he says. He says, "If it is you, let me come to the water." Now I know I have said that many times. I remember walking into a hospital room once to see this very young mother dying of cancer and a very young children. And you know, these are situations when you know that this is not right. This mother has to leave her children and go, and her anxiety for her kids. And I remember walking out of the hospital, and I'm praying to God. I said, "Listen, if you're up there, if, how many times do we say if?" Peter says, "Lord, if it is you, come and save me." In other words, Peter does not understand Jesus yet. And he does not understand who Jesus is yet completely. But notice how this passage ends. Okay? So Peter is saying, "Lord, if it is you," but the passage ends with the words, "Those who were in the boat did him homage, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" So the passage begins with the words, "If it is you," but by the end of the passage, there is no doubt. They did him homage, they worshipped him, and they said, "Truly, you are the Son of God." What happened between the beginning and the end? The storm and Jesus walking on the water. That's all that happened. So the struggle plays a role. The struggle makes the disciples invite Jesus into the situation. And once they have recognized Jesus in the midst of their strife, their faith has increased. You see this paradox? There's a cycle here. You invite God into your life in the midst of your struggle, but once you have overcome the struggle, there's got to be reflection. See, many people will do either of the two things. When there are struggles, we ask the question, "God, where are you?" Or we find God helping us, and once the troubles are over, we are over God too. Where's the reflection? What have we learned from the struggle? Do we learn from the storms of life? And so the disciples, from the beginning of the story to the end of the story, and with the struggle in between, are at two completely different places. And so think back at the time you were terrified, and if you sought God's help, how did your faith in God become stronger after that? That reflection, that is crucial. So I've said three things to you today. First, I said that we must keep the big picture in mind. Jesus is God's hand stretched out towards all humanity to save us. Second, I said, the Gospels are inviting us to be men and women of prayer so that we can recognize God when we have struggles. And thirdly, I've said that when we have struggles, God is inviting us to grow in our faith. And every time we grow a little more in our faith, the better we face our next struggle. The cycle continues. So we are here at this Eucharist, and really, I think we are like the disciples in the boat. When I first came to this parish, Father Dave explained this, the structure of this building to me, and he said that this church is built like a boat. It is upside down, all right, but it's built like a boat. And it's like we are these disciples in this boat. And all of us have been terrified. All of us at some point have probably faced fears. And what does Jesus say to us? Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. And I think Jesus is saying that to us today. But Jesus doesn't come in big way, walking on the water, or Jesus comes simply in bread and wine. Like Elijah, let us recognize God in the small way that Jesus is coming to us. And like the disciples, let us do homage and say, truly, you are the Son of God. People of God said,